My name is Matt William Papiello. I'm the singer of Foreignborn.
Louis Nicholas Peskov, the guitar player of Foreignborn.
This is an LA band with, I believe, a 50% San Francisco heritage.
Yeah.
Is that number right?
Okay, basically, Louis and I were going to San Francisco State University, and I used to be in a band called the Cave-Ins, plural, not singular. They actually sent us a cease and desist letter. They threatened to sue us, so we had to change the name, but that's another story. And so Louis used to help us out all the time in this band. He used to play keyboards and Rhodes and organ and stuff. And we also started a side project, a country band called the Disparity Shacks. We played about two shows. Louis was on pedal steel. It was quite phenomenal. And fell apart, of course.
Talk about this band, Matt.
Right out loud. Whoa, crowd. Listen. So then we graduated the same year in 2003, and my other band broke up, the Cave-Ins, and then so I moved in with Louis in the Richmond district, which you spoke of, and then basically our friend actually was moving out of town, and we had this really huge jam. Remember this, like that huge 20-person jam at the Hunter's Point rehearsal studio?
Oh yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And that was kind of the first time. I remember you played like one of the first Foreignborn songs, like Material Witness.
Interesting.
Like, right. And I remember I sang over it, and like it was a big like free-for-all, everyone was improvising. And some of the original seeds for some of the original Foreignborn songs came out of this huge, massive jam. And then Louis, you know, started fine-tuning everything, and, you know, we started practicing, and we had another rhythm section, John Martin and John Parker, another bass player and drummer in San Francisco. And they called me down to sing over some of the songs Louis had written. And, you know, that was that. So we played a couple of shows in San Francisco, about two or three. We were both working at the Conservatory of Flowers in Golden Gate Park. Louis and I, we both...
At the ticket window,
you know.
Giving lectures every once in a while?
Yeah, giving tours to old ladies and children. It was pretty invigorating.
You know, Walkman with a speaker on it, and we used to listen to The Fall and other good music, and when old ladies would come up, we'd turn it down a little bit.
I read that you feel you aren't an instant hit because you don't fit into any one category, which is a good thing, but tricky for record company A&R guys and, of course, radio too.
Yeah, it's definitely tricky. I mean, just to continue where he left off, we moved to L.A., and the thing about L.A. is you're instantly exposed to people in the music business. And I felt like actually originally with our first demo recordings, they did think we fit into some sort of mold. We had the guy who signed Coldplay. He came to see us. He's now the president of Parlophone Records. He's literally 2 years older than us.
But you did have an EP out on Startime, our buddy Isaac, and then another out on an LA label. So how many of the songs on the Wing Now actually were on those EPs?
At the end, I think only two songs were from original EPs. The first was on a real label, Startime, the end of Startime. The second was on our friend who is in that band of Disparity Shacks that we mentioned earlier, our other friend that we play music with. It's his own label that is a vehicle for them to release their own music. And one song from that, Don't Take Back Your Time, ended up last minute on the Wing Now.
Yeah. And you brought in the right bass player and got a built-in producer.
There he is.
Exactly. Hi, producer, you want to talk or you want to stay in the background?
Yeah. I got Louis and Matt down to LA and we recorded some stuff. I brought Garrett over to play drums on it and it just worked really well and really easily and we were all pretty happy with it. So
it's really, really well produced, but it doesn't sound overproduced. But it's a gorgeous record.
Well, I think it's just, you know, it's more challenging to make a hi-fi record that isn't kind of cheesy sounding, you know? And so, I mean, a lot of the records that we listened to were very state-of-the-art for their time. From anything from Joy Division to, you know, Fleetwood Mac was, you know, pushing the boundaries recording-wise. And so it's pretty uninspiring to do the same old indie rock lo-fi record that you've heard 8,000 times before, you know? And so that's kind of where we are, I think.
Okay, but when you went on the road for the first time, you fueled your van with vegetable oil. So does any restaurant have a better brand, and are there places I should never eat again?
Asian restaurants have the best grease. It's always the cleanest. Chinese buffets anywhere in the country. as long as it's not a fish seafood buffet.
So fuel your car on those.
On yeah, and definitely don't go to Waffle Houses
or Denny's or Applebee's or McDonald's. Or
was there a bidding war? Because I mean, the record was, and pun intended, ready to rock. You know, it was. It was well produced. Before you signed with Dimmack, but then you also did a little bit of remixing and new sequencing of some of the songs. Am I correct there? So tell me a little bit about how that all came to be.
It's more of a limited skirmish than a bidding war.
Well, how can you go wrong with a label that in its native language means death touch? Interesting first choice of song in Union Hall. It's not that it's different than what follows, but it does require you to get deeper into the record, and I think that's probably a good thing.
Well, I mean, I think it was pretty simple. We just, it was actually one of the last songs that we recorded in the, it was the last song we recorded in the original sequence of songs. And it was just clearly the most kind of far out sounding and immediate, really, even though it's totally unconventional. And since we're not trying to, you know, play the major label, you know, conventional format, radio, whatever circuit, we just decided to put that song first. It seemed like the boldest choice.
So what is the next phase of the band, and what can people expect once, you know, we all go through all the tracks on this record?
I'd say that we wrote most of these songs in 2005 that just came out. And then we've written tons of new material, but kind of have kept it at an arm's length away because, like these songs on the Wing Now, we like played them out, and we don't want to play them anymore now that it's time to be playing them. So certain songs of these new songs, I think, aren't quite finished in a good way. So hopefully, we don't even know what they'll be like by the time we get to them and finish them up. Because if not, we're just going to do the same. It's going to be a vicious cycle, and we'll be bored of the songs again by the time the album comes out. Luckily, we have a short album cycle, which we've negotiated into our deal. So hopefully in another 6 months, we'll be in the studio.
So I guess it is possible to have diversity in Los Angeles as a band.
Yeah, I think LA is actually going through a little bit of a renaissance right now. Something's going on, I think, because I think when we first moved there, there wasn't as much interesting music happening. But over the course of the last year, I feel like we've met lots of different people and or people are actually moving to LA.
What's it like to be playing to an audience, again, back to the fact you've been playing this since 2005, to an audience who the music's probably entirely new to since the record was literally, you know, released a few days ago?
I think it's frustrating from a musician's standpoint because we're trying to like create sets that are engaging upon first listening, whereas we really just want to play things that are maybe more engaging to us. And sometimes it's frustrating to do it night in, night out. That being said, it's pretty easy to get up on stage and press autopilot and play the same songs we've been playing forever.
But also, I think on that note, I think that our set, like even the songs that we play all the time, I think they really come alive when we're on tour. We're playing them every night to new people, and we were going around the country and meeting people who had heard us on KEXP or something. You know, it's like, you know, and it really makes everything come alive. Like I think maybe staying in LA and playing the same songs over and over again gets a little old, but we've been playing around the country to like brand new people. I think it really takes a new life.
We do a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs is the bread, and then as many songs by other artists as you want to play in between. And I am now under moral obligation, after you answer your phone, to play exactly what you tell me to play. And I can tell you that the mix of things I've been asked to play by the 100 bands that have appeared on this show is pretty insane, but I will play it exactly as you ask me for it.